Welcome to episode 62 of the Vancouver Tech Podcast.
I'm Alex Moxon.
And I'm Drew Ogrizek. What did you do last week, Alex?
Last week, I did a little bit of coding progress. I put my Node tutorial on hold, and with a little bit of help from AdaptTech, I created a basic web server to host an event store using Node.js.
What is a basic web server? What is an event store? And why Node.js?
A web server is a way to display information, from what I understand. An event store essentially stores events for CQRS solutions. Let me talk a little bit about the tools that I worked on as well. I learned to use Vimium, which is a Chrome extension, so that I don't have to use the mouse as much, and I'm getting much more comfortable with keyboard shortcuts. I started using IntelliJ IDEA Ultimate, mostly because it supports Node and it gives inline templates as you type, which is really awesome. So it kind of gives you the format, so you kind of learn as you go. So that will give you common structures, it'll help with line endings, parentheses, and brace matching, which is awesome. Because I remember with my tutorial for JavaScript, having to match out, so I was used to double typing brackets and double typing the curly brackets. So that does it for you. The other technology that I used was Yarn instead of NPM. So NPM is Node Package Manager. The reason why we're switching to Yarn is because it's better for getting the exact versions of packages, and it's a lot more robust than NPM. And Facebook and Google use it, so it really can't be all that bad.
Tell me a little bit more about Vimium. Does that add Vim shortcuts to your browser?
It does. Yeah. What you do is you type F, and it gives you all the shortcuts to all of the tabs, so you can actually not even lift your hands off the keyboard, which is awesome.
That's very cool. One of the things that I found when I used a terminal emulator extension to a browser on a Chromebook was that, especially using Vim shortcuts, like Control-W would close my browser. And I found that a little bit aggravating. Of course, I could have remapped the keys.
So how was your week, Drew?
It was an interesting week. I listened to this one podcast. It's called Go Time. I tend to listen to podcasts if I'm walking to work. And the weather lately hasn't been the greatest. But last week, I walked a little bit. And so I listened to Go Time Episode 1. There were three guys talking about a different thing. The one female guy pointed out that she didn't want to ramble about editor plugins because they started talking about editors. And the female guy said she really was kind of an editor nerd, but she didn't want to ramble on and on and on about it. And then the two male guys started rambling on and on and on about Vim. And then I noticed another thing. The female guy brought up this article that had mentioned or was talking about GoConf. And one of the male guys said, you know, I saw that and I was really disappointed that they didn't bring up us or GoTime or GoConf or whatever it was. And the female guy pointed out that she had actually read the article and they did. And she even knew the word that linked to it. And then the male guys were like, oh, ha, 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 they did. But they didn't really acknowledge that they'd kind of hated on somebody else. They kind of seemed to show a lot of, I guess, confidence and not really caring so much. Whereas I think she showed a lot more conscientiousness. And I thought that was really interesting to see the difference in personality. And I gave a little bit of some other thought to responsibility that a developer has to their team. And maybe not just a developer, maybe anybody. What sort of responsibility does somebody have to grow the team that's around them? I really like the idea of working with people that I'd like to work with. People that are fired up about the problems that we're solving, maybe somebody who's better at problem solving than I am, or maybe somebody I can pass some things that I know to. Those kind of things, having that knowledge share is really interesting and appealing to me. And if I find myself on a team that doesn't have a lot of people like that, can I do something about it? And then that leads me a little bit to referral bonuses. Well, referral bonuses seem to be a pretty big thing in tech because it seems to be hard to find people. So do developers especially, but maybe anybody, should they take on this responsibility to grow the team that's around them and therefore maybe being a great blossoming flower within the organization that they are?
Is that one of your goals, Drew, to be a blossoming flower on your tech team?
It really is. More so than maybe a weed that sucks the life out of it. I'm not sure. But I also really noticed when it comes to like work ethic, for example, you know, some people are like, it's 5 o'clock, I'm done. And I think we can understand and we can appreciate that. But on the other hand, I find myself the happiest when I don't really care about time or about money, but I want to do the best that I can do and I want something to be done right. And when it feels like you can, then that's amazing. And so I guess that also comes down a lot to the team that you're with and the responsibility you take to help to grow that. And in some situations, you may find yourself in being managed, and that can kind of suck sometimes. If somebody tries to manage you too much, then it can feel like you can't do what you want and grow things the way you want.
Exactly. You start feeling like your hands are tied mm-hmm. and you're hesitant to. I think the minute you start getting a few ideas shot down, you hesitate to speak up and talk about more things, because what's the point, right? So I think that's awesome that you're actively promoting a culture where you're empowered and you're taking care to develop your team. So that's cool.
Good job. The other part that kind of resonated with me this week to that mm-hmm. was accepting help. I think sometimes when you have, and I'm not trying to suggest anyone on my team is a manager that does that, but I have definitely in the past, and I think I have been myself as well, the type of manager who or tries to manage other people or kind of micromanage or doesn't allow people to blossom. And I think that a big part of that is being able to accept help, surrounding yourself with people that are able to do their thing and maybe taking the responsibility to either learn from them. Mm-hmm. And that's an interesting thing. Take the responsibility to learn from them or to teach them, and being able to accept help were kind of the big themes of my week. I ran into Dan at one of the meetups. So he's got a really cool thing, Code Tour. And something that they brought up that I thought was kind of fantastic was they've been working on a program that generates a programming language, mm-hmm. A different programming language than you may have ever seen. And so you see this programming language and you see the rules. And their idea was we generate this programming language and you give someone a coding challenge in it. But I thought the first time I heard about it was that would be an awesome interview tool. You generate a language and you solve problems together. And I think a lot of people would be afraid of that on the interviewing side mm-hmm. Because it exposes you. Yeah, and that actually made me realize as well, an interview should not be an interrogation, and it should be equally both sides. So having a tool like that can allow the interviewee to see, do I want to solve problems with these people? Do I feel comfortable going in a room, whiteboarding out the solutions to this problem? And if we have an even playing field where there's a coding language that none of us have ever seen before, then that could be quite interesting.
Very cool. I like that. So it's awesome that you are talking about, you know, it's a two-way street when you're interviewing. And I think that's really the case. Oftentimes, I used to work in HR many, many years ago, and I would often take that stance where I would throw a question back on a candidate and not really give them the standard script and kind of get them to think outside the box. And it was really interesting to see the people that responded to that versus the people that clammed up and the reasons why. Sometimes they weren't prepared. Sometimes it's because they were very junior and saying the things that they thought they should say. And then other times, people appreciated the opportunity to actually speak their mind. And those are the people that I found were the more dynamic, interesting candidates to hire.
So when you say dynamic, you mean people that changed a lot?
No, people that were just open to change. People that were open to not doing things rigidly one way. People that could work on a team and respect somebody else's viewpoint while at the same time having their own, which I think is really important.
What about meetups? Did you get to any cool meetups this week?
I did. I went to three. So I went to Hacker Nest. I went to my regular Thursday DDD CQRS ES meetup, which I won't talk about too much.
Well, you can if you want. I'd just like to hear some nitty gritty. What were the details?
I think, the highlight, so we're still working away on Noda, which is our, none of the above. It's our open source crowdfunded sort of, actually, I'm not sure if it's going to be crowdfunded, but it's an open source model for voting, for changing voting and voting reform. So we can talk more about that another time, because we'll be on this for probably another few weeks. But one of the highlighted meetups I went to was on Tuesday. So I went to Tech Vancouver. And they typically have these once a month or once every couple of months. There were a number of really awesome speakers. So Darshan Kaler, CEO and co-founder of Tradable Bits, he spoke about how to build a successful self-funded startup. So he had 10 really awesome points. I'll put a little bit more.
10 points is kind of a lot to remember, isn't it?
It is a lot to remember, yes. Mm-hmm. So next up is Jessica Potch. She's the founder of Mesh Food Exchange, and it's really cool what they do. So they have an intelligent matchmaking service for the redistribution of surplus food. So not just food, but surplus food that would be wasted.
So what would define surplus food? Where would you find surplus food? Would I go to a restaurant? Do they have surplus food? Do they often throw away food that they don't use that's not expired? Do I go to a supermarket? Where does the surplus food come from?
Yeah, those would be both great examples.
Oh, really? Okay. I actually was making up examples that I didn't think would be good. Oh. I had no idea that restaurants would throw away food that hasn't expired, that is usable.
Potentially, or food that's just around their expiry date. So
Oh, okay. So
things that are still good, but technically are past. Anyway, you can find more about it if you link to her company. She's doing some really awesome, cool things there. Next up was Chris Randall. He's the VP of Customer Success and Strategy of Response Tech. He was talking all about finding your niche market. So this comes from decades of experience. Response Tech has been around for, I think, 17 years. And they started in one area, and they realized they weren't really that type of company. They were a company that served an entirely different market. So finding out what your customers do, asking your customers who your customers are, and strategizing and packaging your services to respond to that is really important. So two more speakers, Galia Wessler, founder of Plazas. You can find out more at plazas.com. Final speaker was Jean Lozano from Media Valet. And they were speaking on their journey from being a services-based company to software as a service. So again, similar journey to Response Tech and many decades of experience.
What are some key takeaways that I could have had I gone there?
I think the key points for me is that really focusing on your customers. There were a number of speakers that talked about it. So going out to the market, asking your customers what it is that they're looking for versus creating a solution that you think will be awesome, but not actually market testing it. When you're a startup, you might have a really cool idea, but realizing that you need to pivot and not taking that personally, realizing that it's the market that is demanding that you pivot. Not demanding, but being responsive to that.
Makes sense. Sounds like a really good theme. And so all of the people who gave a talk were people who were sort of successful with their company and were reiterating that sort of theme throughout?
That seemed to be the common theme.
And what about this upcoming week? Any Alex's pick for the week?
This week, I think I'm going to take off from meetups. I'll go to our Thursday meetup, but that's probably the only one.
Oh, very cool. I think the one sort of highlight this week for me is going to be the Azure meetup. It's Azure Functions, and I'm particularly interested in Azure Functions because of AWS's Lambdas. I remember hearing about this. Jeff Barr came by, and it was at Unbounce's old office when they were on Pender. And he gave a talk, and I think he mentioned, you know, this is something that's going to be coming up. And so Lambdas are basically, you can write functions and have a serverless sort of microservice that's just functions that perform tasks. So I haven't played around with this at all, but this is something I've heard a lot of people talk about. It's one of the new hotness in infrastructure. And we're here with our special guest, Nick Badminton. Thanks for joining us, Nick.
Yeah, thank you for having me here.
Cool. So you've got a really interesting and varied background. Could you tell us a little bit about how you got into speaking about the future?
Back at university, I started university at in Bournemouth in the UK in 1993. And I did a course called Applied Psychology and Computing. Now, it was quite a progressive course at the time. It looked at human-computer interaction, behavioral psychology, cognitive psychology, how that applied to the realm of computers. Mm-hmm. It looked at chaos theory, complexity theory. I actually specialized in artificial intelligence and linguistics. And used to build like single layer neural networks to detect grammar or not detect grammar. And so all the way back then, I was already thinking very differently about how to look at the world and what to do in the future. And so out of there, I went straight into working in the tech field. I was a developer. I'm a terrible developer, so I stopped doing that very quickly. But I was actually very sort of savvy in terms of business and consulting and thinking about change and about the application of data. Mm-hmm. So I actually went from there, worked in telecoms billing systems, so software again, and built some of the world's first very large data warehouses to do things like churn analysis and whatever. And then from there, I went into management consultancy for a number of years, and I moved to Canada about 8.5 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I've been living in Vancouver all that time. And I was working in advertising for about 5-6 years. And, you know, so a pretty broad range of thinking. But the fact that I was very sort of future focused and thinking about how, you know, technology popping up today could be applied in different ways has always served me very, very well. Mm-hmm. And 4 years ago, I did a conference called Cyborg Camp. That was a really pivotal moment. Myself and Karis O'Connell worked with Amber Case, who's a TED speaker. She did a TED talk called We're All Cyborgs Now. Mm-hmm. And we put on this event. I ran it off my credit card. It was very sort of grassroots. And we had 150 people fly from all over the world.
Wow.
And it sort of really sort of proved to me that there was a real passion and an interest in the future and how things could be quite different. At that conference, there was a number of people there, including a guy called Chris Dancy, who's known as the most connected guy in the world. Mm-hmm. Amazing. Lots of really great thinkers. So that was sort of a pivotal moment. Then I did another conference called From Now the year after with Nora Young from CBC Spark. She came in and did a number of things there. I had an NFC chip implanted into my hand on stage there.
Nice.
So always been a bit edgy, always been a bit challenging of how things are happening. You know, wearable computing, the Internet of Things, all of these things are sort of commonplace now. Mm-hmm. I was doing conferences on it when no one cared. So from that and just, I started writing for the Huffington Post and got picked up for doing a lot of different writing and thinking. Mm-hmm. And got published in their online magazine, got put onto their TV show, subsequently wrote for a number of other publications. And today I write for TechCrunch and a number of publications on TV and radio. So, yeah, it's how do I get into thinking about the future? It's just a natural thing for me now because I've done it for so long. Mm-hmm. I read about 60 or 70 blogs a day.
Wow.
And I do a lot of thinking. I argue a lot with people and I make bets.
So that's pretty interesting. You do a lot of thinking, you argue with people and you make bets. So what are some of the things you think about? What are some of the biggest things that you might argue about, and how often do your bets pay off?
Yeah, so I get asked this question quite a lot. So there's three things that have happened in the last sort of 3 months or so that I've actually sort of, you know, metaphorically and actually put money down on, right? Mm-hmm. So I made a bet with a good friend of mine at the end of last year when I was doing my trends predictions and thinking about where the world's going. I actually think that with this advent of augmented reality and mixed reality, virtual reality, that the world's actually, people are going to start looking through, you know, lenses and glasses and devices into the world and have an augmented mixed reality. Everything from like entertainment to like the workplace, manufacturing, factories, it's all got an amazing amount of applications.
Mm-hmm.
I actually think by the end of this year, Apple's going to announce the advent of the completely clear iPhone. So you'll be able to hold your iPhone up and look directly through OLED like sandwich glass screens. Mm-hmm. So that one's a real long shot. So I'm on the hook for a steak dinner if I get that one wrong. The second one was I was at a wedding last year and we were talking about blockchain.
Mm-hmm.
And we all know how blockchain is going to be a huge revolution. But, you know, it's not like the cryptocurrency side of it that's really interesting. You know, Ethereum using blockchain for a number of different ways of storing everything from like decisions through to, you know, contracts or whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's that completely defensible, uncorruptible, you know, record. And I was at this wedding and this guy worked in banking and I said, you know, talking about blockchain, and I said, within 10 years, 25% of the world will actually be impacted and be actively using blockchain technology. And I put $2,000 on that. So
nice.
Yeah, so that's a little bit more edgy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you think about that, all you need is like most of the major banks in the world to suddenly switch on blockchain technology, even in a small form in their back end.
Yeah.
And that's it. I've won the bet.
So that sounds to me like you're looking at, looking at different trends in technology, seeing how things are happening and kind of projecting relatively short term what's going to happen at the end of the year, in the next year or few months.
There's a number of different scales about what I do think about. You know, I look at the near term, like what's happening this year and mm-hmm. what's going to change this year. I do look like 3, 5, 10, even like 20 or 30 years out. I was just up in Prince George this week. Mm-hmm. The Premier's Forum on Natural Resources, and the MLA, Mike Morris, he's a great guy. He called me up last year. He said, I saw you on television with YVR Airport.
Mm-hmm.
We'd like you to come and talk about British Columbia in 35 years or 30 years. I'm like, okay. So get off the phone. We work out all the contractuals, and then I'm sat there, and it was one of the most difficult things I've ever done. Because you try and speculate 2 to 3 years out, fine, you're going to be pretty much in the good ballpark, right?
Mm-hmm.
But when you're actually talking about an entire province with, like, you know, maybe 10 million people in it, potentially by that time, and how all of these small towns and small cities and large cities like Vancouver are going to be in 2050, you have to really go digging deep.
Mm-hmm.
So I spent over 100 hours researching that. I read dozens of articles. I spoke to many, many different people, you know, in the natural resources sector and the tech sector as well,
mm-hmm.
but really understanding that if we root our thought in exponential growth, an exponential growth of technology,
mm-hmm.
and that's an absolute fact and will continue to be.
By exponential growth, you mean we can't look at the last 50 years and then say there's the amount of change we had, so we'll have that amount over the next 50 years. We would maybe say we'll have that amount over the next 5 years.
Yeah. It, you know, like linear growth is like expecting your sales in a sales organization to go up 10% each year. Mm-hmm. Well, exponential growth is this idea that you grow not by one piece per year, like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, but, you know, exponentially, like 2, 4, 6, mm-hmm. you know, 12.
By orders of magnitude.
By orders of magnitude, right? And so that, and that growth comes from, you know, technology primarily. Mm-hmm. So people talk about electronic vehicles, right?
Yep.
And they're like, oh, you know, this isn't really going to take over like what life is like. But, you know, Elon Musk sold 180,000 Tesla 3s mm-hmm. in 24 hours in the world's most successful product launch last year.
Yep.
And I was in on that.
Oh, you're in that. So, and when I was at the Natural Resources Conference, there's 1,000 people there. I said, like, hands up who bought a Tesla 3. 2 people at the back. And it's like, you know, it was really telling. And it's like, this is it, right? In 24 hours, Elon Musk has changed all the timelines on the adoption of electric cars because mm-hmm. by 2020, there's going to be something like 450 Tesla 3s being delivered in an 18-month period mm-hmm. to people. That's a game changer. He wants to be the
and biggest... 2020 is only a couple of years away.
Yeah, yeah. And he wants to be the biggest car manufacturer by 2020, like 500,000 vehicles a year.
Looking a little bit forward, are there people doing research into I/O between the human brain and computers? If so, what sort of stuff are they doing? How far out do you see that? And how big of a game changer would that be?
Ooh, so this has got a lot of different applications today. I mean, I've got a friend that suffers with Parkinson's, mm-hmm. and he's got something like right into the center of his brain and a little knob on his sort of belt that he can adjust, and he stops his shake. So we're already there in terms of those sort of simplistic, you know, neural influence kinds of you know, very basic sort of technologies. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, there's speculation about neural lace, which can do everything from like monitor the brain to stimulate different parts for performance potentially. I mean, thinking about this, some of the oldest technology for adjusting how the brain works is psychedelics. So, you know, and that goes back thousands of years. Mm-hmm. In the modern world, you know, we are going to have chips in our brains. We're going to be able to, you know, influence how it changes. I think nanotechnology is going to be a huge advance. I was just at the University of Waterloo's Institute for Quantum Computing and the Nanotechnology Lab as well, mm-hmm. and it blows my mind. They're going to be down to like 4 nanometers in size, which is tiny, 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 yeah. tiny. I think like a hair is something like 100,000 nanometers in width. So we're talking very, very small. Now, when this technology actually kicks in, it's going to be quite analog, but it's going to be programmed in a way to, you know, either deliver a payload of you know, any kind of medicine or stimulant or whatever. Mm-hmm. I think that's where the technology is going to work with sort of, you know, the influence on the brain, right? But like, you know, we've got EEG helmets that can be used. It's very difficult to harness, you know, that kind of brainwave power, mm-hmm. and you need a lot of silence and a lot of concentration. So it's not got a lot of great applications these days, but it's getting better and better. So yeah, there's a lot of opportunity there. That's one part of sort of science and development that is a little bit more unclear. You know, we're not going to be necessarily reading people's minds yet, but there have been studies where you've actually connected, you know, people across the US, mm-hmm. and they wear these helmets, and one person's on one end moving the mouse and typing on the screen, and the person like 2,000 kilometers away does exactly the same thing because one brain tells the other brain what it wants to do.
Wow.
That's pretty cool stuff.
That's very cool.
It also seems like you've been pretty busy and you've got a lot of talks coming up.
Next week, I'm actually going to be in Victoria at the Privacy Security Conference. Mm-hmm. I do that every year. I get invited back because I do some really edgy, different thinking panels. It's a government conference. Last year, we took a very senior member of government to my hotel room in Victoria, and we injected him with an NFC chip in his hand.
Is that even legal?
We were kicked off site by the deputy minister. So government can't be like seen to support that kind of thing, not on their premises. We like to be edgy. So I'm doing a panel there with three of the world's greatest thinkers on virtual and mixed reality. So Karis O'Connell from Archeact here in town. We've got Mac Flavel, who runs Hammer and Tusk, mm-hmm. which is part of Axiom Zen now. And we've got this amazing guy called Denny Unger, who's the CEO of Cloudhead Games. And he was the guy that him and his team solved the seasickness problem in VR a few years ago. And, like, yeah, they're up in Qualicum Beach, and they've got Qualicum Beach Old Fire Station. It's like 8,000 square foot space where they can run around and do all different kinds of mixed and virtual reality. So it's going to be – they're ready for an argument. I'm the host, and I'm just going to calm them down. Then on the Saturday, I'm going to be up at Quest University in Squamish, a conference called Our Futures, and I'm going to be talking about love.
Quest University up in Squamish.
So, yeah, that's in a week's time. That was going to be really exciting. And then following that, I'm going to Grand Prairie. I'm going to San Francisco. I'm flying all over the place. So it's going to be really cool.
So if our listeners would like to get a hold of you, what's the best way to reach out to you?
You can go to my website, which is nicholasbadminton.com. There's not many Nicholas Badmintons in the world. There's one other guy in South Africa. But yeah, you'll tell the difference anyway. But you can go to that website. You can also email me at nick@nicholasbadminton.com. Reach out. Find me on LinkedIn. And I'm always open to have conversations. I actually run a podcast as well now, and I'm undergoing a big sort of rebranding of my entire organization.
What's your podcast called?
Right, it has been called the Modern Futures Podcast, and it's been amazing. I've spoken about with experts on everything from like sex with robots through to the future of marriage, mm-hmm. All the way through to like media, what startups are like. I interviewed Keith Ipple there. And now it's actually going to come under a new sort of brand that I'm putting together as an organization called Exponential Minds. And you're the first people that I've ever spoken to that about in media. So
Exponential Minds, you hear it first on the Vancouver Tech Podcast. Well, Nick Badminton, thank you very much for being on our podcast.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Vancouver Tech Podcast.
Check out our website, vancouvertechpodcast.ca.
Rate and subscribe on iTunes. Much appreciated.
You can follow us on Twitter, VanTechPodcast.
Feel free to leave some comments below.
You can also hit us up on the YVR Dev, the Vancouver Tech, the VanTech Slacks. I'm at James.
And I'm at Drew. Special thanks to Sameroom for hooking us up with an integration that allows us to have a cross-team Slack channel, VanDevs.
Do you have a meetup that you want us to plug? Email us, show@vancouvertechpodcast.ca.
Music by A Shell in the Pit from the game Parkitect. See you at one of the meetups around town.